Daily Drive is brought to you by IHS Market, a leading provider of automotive insight and intelligence across the entire automotive value chain, from product planning to sales, marketing, and the aftermarket. Learn more at ihsmarket.com/automotive.
I'm Jason Stein, publisher of Automotive News, and this is Daily Drive. It's Thursday, April 23rd. With factories shuttered and workers sitting at home, a return to normal may seem distant, but auto seating supplier Lear Corporation wants businesses to get ready for that day. So it recently shared a free guide on steps and best practices to take when it's safe to resume operations. Lear's 51-page Safe Work Playbook outlined protocols ranging from advanced social distancing practices to on-site health screening of workers, visitors, and contractors. It also offered advice on setting up a pandemic prevention team to coordinate stricter operations and virus responses across a business. Lear stepped out in front of the industry when it released the guide, and it isn't claiming to know all the answers in today's fast-changing situation, but it is willing to talk about them. We've reached Lear CEO Ray Scott at his home in Michigan. Hi there, Ray. How are you?
Great, Jason. How are you doing?
Good. It would be great for us to learn a little bit more about your 51-page guide to safely bringing work back to your plants. Can I start with just what led to your decision to release that guide? You really stepped out in front of the industry when you did that, and just curious what your decision-making was.
Yeah, I take it back a little bit. It's amazing now that we're in shelter in place and quarantine. It seems like we've been locked down for a long time, but in reality, this has happened over a relatively short period of time. And I think back to China and how the virus was spreading throughout Asia and into Italy, and a lot of our plants were adapting and learning along the way best practices. And we really were learning from how China was restarting their plants and taking those best practices and making sure our plants were equipped and taking other things like the CDC guidelines and the World Health Organization and a number of different publications on best practices. But we didn't really have in one place a tool that we could give our plant managers. And so as we started to shut down our plants, I thought it gave us a great opportunity to, one, kind of rethink the practices we had learned and best practices we had discovered, along with best recommendations from other organizations, and establish a playbook that we could give our plant managers. I think what's important is we have great plant managers and great operators and great teams within our plants, but no one's ever been through a pandemic and a crisis like this. And so I thought giving our plant managers the tools to understand clearly what a pandemic team should look like, what are the required steps with temperature checking, what do you do with that data, how do you have isolation and areas where we can quarantine people in the event that somebody is not feeling well. How do we educate our employees? Disinfectant materials, disinfection stations, work protocols, etc. And so that's a lot. But I felt, you know, as we're going through this downtime, to be very effective and useful to take that time and create a manual that is something that could be easily distributed around the world to all of our plants. And so that's how we started it. And then I think the team did an incredible job of compiling a playbook as easily legible, readable, and useful. And that's how it started.
Some of the elements that you have in the guide seem very difficult to execute for obviously all the right reasons. But, you know, very simply, the issue of keeping employees farther apart in work cells and maybe the assembly area. Could that mean redesigning some of your plant procedures?
Yeah, I want to be clear, too. You know, this is a very nasty virus. And even though we've accumulated what I believe to be the best practices, and it's a living document, so it will change. We still have to be flexible. And, you know, even though we feel that we can create the safest environment, no one is absolutely 100% protected if we don't follow the protocols and adjust. And so, yeah, every facility has the ability to be flexible. Even though we've outlined best practices, we know there's facilities around the world that, you know, 6 feet is very challenging. 6 inches in some cases is more what the standard is. So we have to create different situations and protocols within those facilities. And in some cases, it may require us thinking about our plant layout differently. And in other cases, it may require an enormous amount of protective equipment and different policies and practices within those plants. So even though we've written up very specific guidelines, we also have to be aware of different products and processes and environments that may require different types of thinking. And so, yes, it is requiring us to be a little bit flexible in how we may lay out a plant or capital, and also within work cells and how we perform our work at those workstations.
And it could mean, Ray, that we just define what efficiency looks like in a new world, right?
Yeah, I think that's important. And, you know, let me give you an example. You know, one, under safe protocols, you know, how we enter a plant and exit a plant is important so that you have safe distancing between shifts. So what was required, maybe a 30-minute shift change, could be an hour or longer, given the time required for safe exiting of a plant and entering of a plant. And so we are looking at what the efficiencies and capacity requirements will be under the safe protocols. And those will change. And so, you know, those are things that we're going through as far as training modules and training setups, and making sure we're very mindful. We've stated very clearly that, you know, the safety is the priority of our and health and safety of our employees. And then the secondary part of that is going to be production capacity and efficiency. And so it's a balance, but the priority is health and safety, which will in some cases change what our throughput is.
I want to change subjects for a moment. We've seen many times in recent history that it isn't the big tier one supplier that affects the supply chain, but smaller, sometimes more obscure suppliers somewhere upstream who might not have the resources or the organization to cope with a complicated problem. And you could envision those arising from this situation. How is Lear working with its own suppliers to bring the supply chain along when the time comes?
That's a really good question. And I think one of the main reasons why I felt it was necessary to go public with at least what we consider to be best practices at this stage, and because it was an easy way for us to immediately go out and distribute best practices to a number of different suppliers throughout the supply chain, and in a way that was very efficient. I think time is a critical element here. And as opposed to going and having to make sure that suppliers got the information, read the information, understood the information, let's just go public. So that was really a primary objective when we went public. And then also I think sharing best practices is very important when we're talking about the health and safety of our employees. And we have no ego with this. If there's other policies and practices that are superior to what we're looking at, we'll be more than happy to adjust and take those ideas. But in respect to our supply base, we spend an enormous amount of time with our supply base, making sure they understand the protocols and the requirements to start back up under a safe work environment. In addition to it, we've established a way to validate and certify at least what I call as a KPC or a key metrics that are required at a minimal amount within the plants that we're distributing to our suppliers so that we're aligned. And again, you know, I think there's a tremendous amount of work that goes into this, and the kind of the pillars that we're looking at, and we'll be getting this out hopefully soon, is there's really four elements. I mean, I'm looking at educating the employees to the new work environment they'll be coming back to, the training and training modules, the you know, we're setting up very robust training modules that are consistent, so that we have consistency throughout not our facility, but hopefully within our suppliers' facilities. And then verification and audit. Like I said, within the manual, there could be hundreds of different actions and steps, but what we're looking at are 30 of them are absolutely key to, making sure you're effective within the plant. You can do a lot more, but making sure you're auditing on a daily basis those key measurables. And so there's additional work that has to be done, but we are communicating and making sure we're giving our suppliers the tools we have and the things that we're putting in place to hopefully help. And again, I don't claim to know everything, and I think our teams have done a great job, but if there's better practices and policies and procedures out there, we'd be more than happy to incorporate those into our playbook and make sure we have them updated within our plants and our supply base.
I guess I'm also worried about the capital that some lower level tiered suppliers would need in order to operate effectively, whether some have been successful staying in business, whether they have the right employees, whether they have the right inventory counts in order to help you. Is there a way that you obviously have enough to do to make sure that your own ship is righted, but can you also reach down and stabilize those tier two and tier three suppliers?
You know, Jason, I think, and I don't have all the answers on that, because you're right. I mean, when we talk about the requirements just for PPE equipment, the first priority has been the hospitals and the municipalities and the people on the front lines. And there's going to be a big pull in respect just to PPE with the supply base too. And so we are trying to understand where that demand is going to be and where it's going to be needed. And it's something that we're going to have to work on with our suppliers. I think, you know, what we've been focused on, and you're absolutely right, is making sure we have our facilities trained in the event that we have to turn our attention to assist or help. We want to make sure that we're prepared to do that. And I absolutely think that that's going to be required. But we are looking at two different ways, one from a safety and then obviously from a capital liquidity perspective, making sure that we have some line of sight on those issues so that where it's necessary, we can at least help them. But that is going to be a challenge. And I don't think there's answers for all the questions that are out there right now.
I mean, visibility on even demand seems to be a little foggy right now, right, Ray?
Yeah, I think we're working closely with our customers, and we're trying to, I think, understand and appreciate where demand is going to be. I don't think it'll be equally weighted across every single platform, every single region, but they are giving us some insight to where they're seeing demand. But there's no question about it. I think the landscape has changed dramatically, and making sure you're having some visibility to that from week to week is very important.
And some have said that there should be a coordinated effort to restart the industry, because you could have regions of the world that are running at a higher level than other regions. Would you support that notion?
Well, I think you have to be aware that, you know, even in the U.S., you have different states that are operating at different levels with different sensitivity and different different levels of who's infected and different rates. And so, yeah, you have to be aware. Mexico right now is down, and they've stated that they will be down for this month and next month. Will that change if North America is to open up? It could. But, yeah, there's all kinds of different other than just having the plant operationally ready for safety, there's a number of different factors that contribute to having a successful startup. And I do think that it will be staggered. I do think that there'll be some startups and shutdowns relative to material availability, those type of things, the things that you mentioned, Jason, relative to all suppliers being equally ready. I think there'll be some challenges. So I think there's not just one factor. This is not a light switch by any sense where you turn it on and everything runs like it was when we went down. I think there's going to be a number of things that we're going to have to deal with as we start to emerge and start the businesses back up, but being very prepared, hopefully to the best that we can, to manage through some of those challenges.
Right before the pandemic, Lear was moving with great determination into new technologies, new ideas about electronics, vehicle cabin architectures. How will you get back on track with some of your innovations when normalcy returns? And do you think the industry, once restored, is going to have the same willingness to consider those new technologies?
Yeah, a couple of things. One, our priority has been the people and obviously capital and liquidity. And I think the third priority, equally as important, is our strategic options and the landscape in a way it's been changing, and keeping a very close eye on how things will change in respect to customers, suppliers, footprint, et cetera. And so, we've managed to really separate in respect to how we're looking at that. And I do agree with you that the landscape will change. And I think when we think about some of the capital allocations and the balancing of some of the innovation technology, there's going to be limitations. I still think we're well positioned when we look at electrification and connectivity. I think those are two areas that are still areas of growth. But I also think that there's going to be other opportunities, and we're going to have to be mindful of how things may look when we do emerge and this is behind us, because I do think there will be changes in the market relative to consumer demand, customer preferences with features, and those type of things. And I still think we're well positioned. I do think we're being very selective with how we're looking at investment, and mindful that things may change, and there may be opportunities that may present themselves that, in some cases may have not been there before the crisis.
So finally, Ray, when you look at your priorities after this terrible moment has passed and things begin to return to normal, how would you stack your priorities?
Our priorities are the people, health and wellness that we touched on. Secondly is our capital and liquidity. And third is what we talked about just now with strategy and how we're going to redeploy our capital as we emerge.
Thank you so much, Ray, for being part of Daily Drive. Really appreciate your thoughts, and best of health to both you, your family, and all of your Lear teams.
Yeah, you too, Jason. Thank you for your time.
That's Daily Drive for Thursday, April 23rd. For breaking news, go to autonews.com. And for a library of these stories, go to autonews.com/dailydrive. We'll be back tomorrow. And now, a word from our sponsor.
For 100 years, IHS Markit has been a proud partner to the automotive industry. With a legacy dating back to 1920, when R.L. Polk published the first vehicle registration reports, through the good times and bad, IHS Markit has been there to analyze what happened, identify how best to reach your audiences, and prepare you for what to expect in the months and years to come. Today, with the onset of COVID-19, these insights have never been more important. IHS Markit is committed to helping industry stakeholders navigate these turbulent times. As such, IHS Markit has released insights related to COVID-19 from experts across multiple interconnected industries to help you better navigate the ever-changing landscape and understand what it means for your business. Download our weekly rapid response report and get a quick week-over-week snapshot of what's changed in the market. Read the results of our disruption survey that assesses the impact of the pandemic on the supply chain. And access our most recent webcast on automotive demand and production. Our global team of analysts is on standby to help you understand the impact across the market and consider strategic decisions as the industry moves forward. Find out more at ihsmarket.com/COVID.